Yo. Can you hear me?
You listening to
What a week.
Eita, welcome to another episode of Wow, What a Week. Today on the show, he's one of the coolest dudes you'll ever meet. In fact, many would argue this is three people in one because he's a medical doctor. He's a recently minted award winner, a recently minted hubby, we are told, though I don't see a ring on the finger. And he's back on your TVs, I think, after a seven-year hiatus. Incredible dude. He's coming up next. And no, he's not a proctologist, and I've checked my prostate already. So don't worry. It's not that kind of show. So last week, we spoke about creating real spaces for creatives. Now we've seen it come to life. The Johnny Walker Afro Exchange Creative Summit was not just an event. It was a space to create. From DJing classes to mixology, art and fashion, workshops, every moment was hands-on and inspiring. And it didn't stop there. We had panel discussions across different disciplines, unpacked the journeys, the highs, the challenges, and what it takes to grow as a creative. But the real magic was the connections. Creators meeting creators, collaborations starting in the room, and energy could truly be felt. This wasn't just about watching. It was about participating. It was about building. And if you were there, you know. And if you missed it, make sure you don't miss the next one. And please, sip slow and savor the craft with Johnny Walker. Enjoy drinking, and please drink responsibly.
Wow! What a week. What a week. Celebrity guest.
Celebrity guest.
We're good? Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, lovers of medical doctors, men in coats and stethoscopes, and Lilo Nabo, Hobotukumo Doctor Kuponchek, please make some noise for Dr. Fez.
Woo!
Dr. Mkhize.
I feel like that was such a hype up.
You might as well.
It's
once in a while.
Hey, the ancestors.
Did you ever walk into hospital in a Beshunje?
That is actually how you end up getting kicked out. Medical legally, that's where they usher you out.
But it's your culture. Fusi. And the constitution says, the preamble says,
it's my love that you've already got the backup plan for the fact that you are just out here, just moving around.
No, this is me putting to work my 1 year of L101.
Okay. Yeah. No. I'll put it on the possibly to-do list.
Yes, sir.
If I feel like I want to transition completely out of any health space, just walking in Koipesh, people will look at me like, hey, my brother, what's happened? Too much TV, too much entertainment.
No, tell them, in fact, I remember the first time I moved to Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm in a taxi going to Boston along Louis Botha.
Hey, that's how I know it was tough times.
It was a very, very long time ago. Yes. And as we were driving through Orange Grove, Dr. Shabalala, Zulu chemist, was like, traditional healer.
Zulu chemist sounds so professional, though. Zulu chemist sounds like...
And that's what it was.
Oh,
exactly.
So you went. Is so, this why you have
no,
such vitality?
I drove past.
It's fine.
Yeah. I've got my own muti guy, not him. You see, we must all have chemists of sorts, as long as it's not, those pharmaceuticals.
Those ones, that are on the robots when you're driving by in large.
I remember you, 2018.
Of course you must.
Presenter search, SABC presenter search.
Yeah.
I was one of the judges. And we did auditions, like a gang of you showed up.
Yeah.
What was it that said, Doc, here's an opportunity?
So this is the funny story about that whole thing.
And yes.
I think because I've watched so many, I know so much about you, I think you'll enjoy the serendipity.
Yes.
Well, I need to show you that I did a degree.
Yes.
Serendipity. So at the time I had a partner and her friend who were going to audition. And those auditions were huge. Like thousands of people from across the country were air wanderers there by Ilogo.
Yes.
They were there the whole day. I was working at the hospital. So I was working. It was a day shift in the weekend. And then I said, you know what? I'll come by you and pick you up when you're done. Because they went early morning. So eventually, end of the day, I'm coming through. My scrubs have blood on them. But I'm like, okay, I'm going to go pick them up. I get there. Security guard's like, Hey, auditions are done. I'm like, brother, look at me. I'm wearing scrubs. I'm not here to audition. I'm picking somebody up.
Yeah.
He looks. He's like, okay, fine. Go in. I go in through the main stadium. It's empty because everybody's now either gone home or gone up.
Yes.
I call her. I'm like, hey, where are you? They say we're on to the next level. Just come wait with us. We're almost going to audition. I go to the front there. Konusisi. I'm like, hey, ma'am, I'm just fetching a friend of mine and my partner up there. They're like, no, you're not allowed past here unless you have a number.
Yes.
I'm like, I'm not auditioning, ma'am. I just need. She's like, listen, you're here. Just sign. We give you a number. You can go up.
Yes.
I sign. They give me number 5,642, some random number. I go upstairs. I meet them. I'm like, hey, I want to go home. I've worked the whole day. I'm going to come back. Then you guys audition and get finished. They're like, no, we're almost there. It's three phases. You go, you see them, then you see somebody else, and then the celebrity judges will be there.
Yeah.
I go, fine, I'll wait. I'm waiting. They go, hey, there's an old khaki stall there. You're in bloody scrubs. Everybody keeps looking at you. Why don't you change?
Yeah, because you want to freak everyone out.
Yeah. Because I'm in the corner. So I change. Like this guy in blood, he looks like he's just come off the street. So I change.
He looks like who's next.
Exactly. It's like, hey, Jeffrey Dahmer's. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, I change. I put on the old khaki. We take a couple of photos for the old khaki shots. I'm like, cool. So now I'm waiting and they go off and I'm waiting for them to come. All of a sudden, this kind of short guy comes up. He looks at me. Grabs my paper because I have this paper. I'm like, hey, listen, I'm supposed to be here, blah, blah, blah. He goes, come with me. Yeah. I'm like, are you sure? He's not come with me. We go behind. And now that I think about it, this guy just takes me into the back rooms. And I'm just like, let's just go. I didn't think that he was going to do anything shady. Long story short, he puts me here. He says, if I put you in front of a camera, would you be able to say some words?
Yeah.
I'm like, I mean, I've done some commercial. I've done some modeling. I can do something. He's like, okay, cool. You want to go see the judges and stand in the corner. And I was like, okay. Literally from there, saw Jonathan Boyton Lee, a bunch of judges. They say, give us a link. 1, 2, 3, we finish. I walk outside. I literally have to wait still for my partner's friend, my partner. My partner makes it to the end. The friend unfortunately doesn't. But at the end of it, I get called and then we were with you, reunion. I win.
Yeah.
Just like that, in scrubs. Came in bloody scrubs, left out top billing present.
Now you're bloody rocking.
Hey! You had that long. You had that way too ready. Like, you're bloody rocking.
We're going to do a quick rapid fire just to warm you up a bit.
Yeah.
S3 or SABC3, which do you prefer? Which rolls off the tongue better?
If you're SABC3.
If you're a branding genius, which would you go with?
I'd go S3 for the simplicity, but I'm from SAPC3, so that holds something to my heart.
Yes.
Branding S3, but personal. Because I'm old,
SAPC. Right. When you won the SAFTA, who did you call first, mom or wifey?
Oh, my mother.
Yeah.
My mother, screaming with the neighborhood, screaming. Because I shouted out Potchefstroom. People don't know where Potchefstroom is. Potchefstroom was like,
yes,
Shepstein. My mother was ecstatic. They were voting nonstop. The people in Makaya, they're in the villages, standing on roofs to get signal to vote. So I was like, no, it has to be them.
Is it true that more often than not, we marry our mothers?
Well, this is what's funny because I'm not actually married.
Yeah.
So this is the funny thing. I'd imagine if somebody would marry, you'd marry somebody who would be like your mother purely because that's the woman you fell in love with first.
Yeah. But you're dating?
I'm dating.
You're dating?
Yes, I am.
Dating. So you've got...
I've got someone who's there, who's keeping me on the straight and narrow.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, that right. Hey, that right.
No, I believe you, doc. Uh-huh. Who'd never not believe a doctor? You're a doctor, so it must be fact.
Listen, I always like that because when people go, trust me, I'm a doctor, I look at you and I go, I know many colleagues who I will trust them as far as I can throw them. So I don't know if that's true.
Shorts and flip-flops Fez pitching up at UCT Med School.
That was me.
How long before you bought jeans?
I had jeans, first of all. Let's not get that twisted. But I just thought jeans were formal wear. I come from the South Coast. So literally I had a Sharks shorts because KZN, like with the little Sharks emblem, they were brown. And then the Haviana type thong slobs. And I'd wear those to lectures. Yeah. And I was saving the jeans, you know, for formal, something formal.
For a special occasion.
Yeah, just the jeans and closed shoes. I was like, one day I'll need to, I don't know, win an award and I'll be there with
I'll go to church, something.
That's when people were like, hey, this is a village boy here. And I was like, hey, guys, I'm from KZN, like small town KZN.
Mr. Supernatural Sash or Safta Golden Horn? Which is most prominent at home right now?
That's tough. Because Mr. Supernatural was, it's like basically one of the biggest male pageants in the world.
Yes.
Never had a black person win a male pageant, nor an African. Mm. So winning that was like 30 years of having nobody who looked like us winning it. And there's this big international award. But then there's the SAFTA, which is like our Oscar. Hey, both of them are there. The sash is in the bedroom. The SAFTA is when you walk into the house.
Mm.
Yeah, just to make sure that that's the first thing you see, the golden horn.
If Dr. Mkize referred a patient to present Mkize, what would the treatment plan be?
If Dr. Mkize, it'll probably be, and this is going to sound so cheesy, I'd be like, hello, Dr. Mkize.
Yeah.
This is patient Fresh.
Yeah.
He is coming in with enlarged prostate. Please handle him with care. Explain everything up front and then make sure that he gets the best possible care within a public health sector.
But why are you using these fingers as you're talking about?
Because I imagine that your prostate is deeper than most. Because you're long. When you're long, I must use the longest finger I have to. And I was actually going to ask you, have you done your prostate exam?
Every year. I did the bloods. What's it called again?
The PSA.
The PSA. Yes. No, every year I do my bloods without fail.
See, this is what I love. And once a year, you don't need to.
Yeah.
You're not going there three times.
No, once a year. Okay. And I advise all my male friends, don't take things like just go for a checkup lightly.
Yeah.
Don't delay if you feel like. Because often I think as men, we want to be Superman.
Mm.
Or we think, I'll be fine, man. I'll drink water, I'll take a nap. It worked when I was a child.
Mm. Mm.
So I'll drink water, I'll take a nap. I mean, I remember when we had a conversation with Olani before he passed away from cancer. He says that he went to the loo, he passed a bit of blood, and he ignored it. He ignored it and thought, no, I'll be fine, man. I'm a strong man.
Yep.
I'll be fine. And before you know it, you have stage 4 cancer. Because we ignore little things. And it's a male thing.
The little things.
Because girls are quick to even say to a bestie, I felt a lump.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think it is?
And you talk about it.
Yes.
Back and forth. And I think that's where the discussions, because I worked in urological surgery for like about 2 years.
Yeah.
And the problem is a lot of these things are a bit of blood.
Yes.
Some erectile dysfunction. Mm. And then I can't walk. And by that time it's spread from that prostate to your spine, stage 4.
Mm.
And so the big reveal is when you can't walk and now we're giving chemo, but it's what you say. As a guy, Begazela, and I gritted through. Also, some guys don't want to talk about like, man, I'm having some trouble in the bed. And then you keep quiet.
That's another conversation I have with a lot of my guys, that because we're so obsessed with performance, we're so obsessed with Amashoha in the bedroom. We're buying over-the-counter meds that are meant to make us harder, faster, and longer.
Yeah.
But we're ignoring the fact that if you're having issues getting it up, there might be issues with your heart. But because we're not reading enough or sharing enough, we don't link it to there might be a cardiac event about to happen.
Exactly.
But we're not, all you're worried about is hitting, reminding her who you are.
Mm. And I think for me, it's such a touchy subject, especially as black men, because we're so strongly connected with performance and showing and indoor tamast and that cardiac stuff does come through with the blood vessels, because that's all it is, like blood vessels throughout the entire body.
Mm.
And some people start taking medication and they're like, cool, it's fixed.
Yes.
But it's like, no, there's an underlying issue that you're not seeing. Mm. All of a sudden, you're touching your chest, you're collapsing. And the worst part is like, you look great. You're even like telling me, no grays, naturally no grays. So you're like, I don't need to worry.
Yeah.
So many little things can indicate that there's a problem, and we just will gloss over it until you collapse and we go, we never knew. But it's like there were many signs. Mm. It's just that you never came to see somebody, or you never spoke to a friend or a brother. Mm. And it's really sad.
Absolutely. Patient in the ward tells you they voted for you for your SAFTA. Do you still charge them consultation?
Listen, there's a discount. You know, I make sure that I point out to the nurse about that one. One has good opinions. Just make sure whenever she asks for something, just add a little extra. You know what I mean? The dosages will stay the same because those are dangerous. Can't give you a little extra morphine, but I'll be like, get it to her within 5 minutes. Within 5 minutes. Which is actually amazing because a lot of patients were saying that. They were like, we voted for you. We kind of made sure that we supported you, which was incredible.
This one is very touchy depending on which side of the spectrum you lie. Should admission into medical school be as regulated as it is?
So that one's, I think, very difficult because we then ask, in terms of regulation, are we saying that should standards drop? I never feel they should.
Never, yes.
They should, because there's so many different professions where you work directly with people and it's literally lives. Like I'll be on set and people will be like, we're not saving lives. And you do feel like I can fluff up here, there, you might lose some money. But if I'm somebody who is not meeting a baseline standard and I'm somebody who might not be able to retain information or is a bit lazier than what my marks would give, then the whole kind of fraternity drops. And that means that our quality drops, and that means people die. It's not that we lose money. It's not that resources go down. People die. So I think when it comes to that standard, we need to be more stringent. When we're speaking about kind of the social-political element, it becomes quite tricky because then we also factor in our history as a country. There's many discussions around the fact that, okay, why should it be like a certain demographic, black people of color should also be looked into and have them considered as special cases. But it's also because we were disenfranchised for so many years. And so there needs to be a concerted effort to try elevate those that were in a bad situation for some time. Because I go, if you take a screen grab of something, if you go, okay, this land here is not actually growing any sort of crop. But you don't understand that this land was over planted and like farmed for many, many years. And you just go, it's inherently not going to be good enough.
Barren now.
Yeah, it's barren. Then you go, okay, then that's just part of what it is. Because if we just took as a screen grab all the kids who do exceptionally well, who go to really fancy schools, you'll never have other kids that have been disenfranchised or have come into a bad situation.
In fact, I remember they had a discussion about it on Talk Radio 702, where they had the different faculty heads from the different universities that have a medical school. And a white parent called in that my child, I don't know, got 8 distinctions, but he didn't make the cut. And I remember the dean, I can't remember from which university, said, you see, you also need to understand that sometimes we look beyond your 8 distinctions. So if your son got 8 distinctions and lives in Houghton, and there's a kid from a village in Limpopo with 8 distinctions, we're likely to give that kid an opportunity because they weathered everything to get those 8 distinctions. So the likelihood of them being more resilient as a doctor are way up there than a kid who might not have suffered as much. So if we're left with just 2 positions, chances are we're going to go with the kid that endured more.
And I think it hurts as a parent because I also understand, and I'm sure you would as well, because I empathize. Like your child didn't go, I want to be in Houghton. I want to. You just know that, okay, this is the target that they told me, at least 8 distinctions.
And I hit the target.
You work to it. Yeah, you hit the target. But then I go, this gentleman started way further back, hit the same target with one eye, a shaky hand. And you go, do you know the amount of the resilience wherewithal all of that had to take to meet you where you are? And then I have to look at it and go, your child is amazing. But then we also have to look at the non-tangible results where I go, he came just as far with far less opportunity. So I have to take that into account. And it, of course, it sucks for the parent who goes, we're all equal. But then you go, but that child started from way further back and was able to make it. So it's a tough conversation.
How is it once you're in there though? Because sometimes you hear a lot of women who are doctors talking about, sometimes I feel I'm in a boys club. And then you have the black dudes who are saying, I feel like, yes, I'm a guy and I might have male privilege, but I'm still a black guy in, you know, trying to be, you know, an expert in a field that might have been predominantly white, for argument's sake.
Yeah. So it's always one of those things where this calculation that you make, because people will talk about oppressive Olympics, the oppressed Olympics, right? Mm. So you go, the Jewish community has had a really hard time, but then you also speak about the black community who's had a really hard time. Then you look at Palestinians who've had a really hard time. Mm. Then you go, okay, we all have had a hard time. And then people start going, yeah, but I've had a harder time than you, and you've had, and you have valid reasons. It ends up becoming this strange discussion of like, okay, so then what is it that we're reaching towards? Because at the end of the day, we've all had difficult times, and who has had a more difficult time? It ends up becoming a moot point because we've already agreed that it's hard for most of us. Mm. And so I find that when you're in it, for me, it was a culture shock going from South Coast, Port Shepstone to Cape Town. Mm. Like just that alone. First flight I took was from there. I was 17 years old. Mom put me into the flight, flew that side. I was literally like that person who was like, okay, about to go up. Oh, the flight's going up. I'm landing. I know I'm going to be there with different people, different. The fact that I was wearing shorts, I went there. I stuck out like a sore thumb.
Yeah.
I was like, I always had, I was bald. So whenever I cut my hair, it was all the hair off because it was the most efficient thing you could do. And then it grows back. So everybody else was trendy looking. So that alone spins you. Mm. Outside of the academia, you're trying to find your feet. You're trying to, I don't come from a lot of money, so it's also scrounging things together to try kind of not look like you're poor, but also understand that people are driving Sirocco's at the time or BMW, and you're there just trying to catch a taxi or a bus. And those are little things that you don't think about as somebody who comes from maybe a more affluent place from the north or wherever. Mm. But these are the things, the hurdles I have to jump through. So you end up sometimes also having a chip on your shoulder. And as a male, I had a chip on my shoulder because I was like, okay, I am black. Quite a lot of white colleagues or students that were also there who had a different kind of upbringing, and their parents would come give them food or take them home for holiday to study.
Yes.
And their parents are doctors and they give them inside info. So all of those little things do make you feel like sometimes you are the persecuted. But, and I can only imagine from a female perspective, a female who's a person of color, but I think at the end of the day, that's just life. I think wherever you're dropped into life, you start wherever you are and you play the cards that you have.
Was there ever a moment where you felt, I'm not going to make it? Either it's too difficult or we don't have the money?
Multiple points. I think going into first year, mindset-wise, it was also different because like at school, I could kind of not necessarily need to go into classes to be able to kind of go and get the marks and the grades that I needed. I think lectures, because they weren't mandatory, like you needed to hit a certain percentage of them, but you could kind of be like, oh, they won't shout at you if you miss one or two. And then I'm also coming from like a small town, so things like you go out and you see people are out late, and I was never out late. I was always at home at a certain time. So now you're almost finding your feet in a world that is like open and expansive. So I think I just started to kind of lose myself in terms of like going out, seeing new people, engaging with new people, and then having to pull myself back and be like, hey man, you need to come back. You need to actually, what brought you here is what you need to focus on.
Yes.
So there were times where I was like, okay, I can get swept up in the craziness of it all. And I had friends who had left the same small town and came to Joburg and they weren't making it and they were failing and going back home, not because they weren't smart, but because they got swept up in the groove. And groove as a child is big things.
Dude, so when I moved to Joburg, I was a DJ already.
Mm.
I mean, I had a little profile, but I was building.
Yeah.
I've come to the capital of clubbing on the continent. And I vowed to myself that unless I've got a gig and I'm making a little bit of money,
you won't go.
I am not going out.
Oh, you saved yourself.
And I kept it up for 3 years, and I'm glad I did.
I don't know how you
because
did.
Because there's kids I saw get swallowed up by Joburg.
Mm-hmm.
Either they were on drugs or they're prostituting themselves. It's just, Josie gets mad.
And I feel like it feels your youthful exuberance and energy. And you know, you come in, big, strapping, handsome young man. Everybody wants, hey, fresh. And the industry you're in, I have friends who went to drugs and smart guys, super humble. But because it's offered and you don't know it, you come from a small place who doesn't have all of those things. You want to taste, feel, unless you came in with that mindset, I feel like it's difficult not to get swept up.
And that's one thing I preach to kids. Never at the end of the day forget to ask yourself, did I hit the target in terms of the end goal?
Yeah.
Because if a day passes that you don't do something towards the target, 2 days will pass, a week will pass, a month will pass. Before you know it, you've wasted a year. So and I think that's actually what kept me on the straight and narrow.
Which is crazy for you to have that from such a young age, I have to say.
I was a dad at 19, 20.
Okay, so then you almost elevated yourself to be mature enough to be a dad.
I was operating from, I'm a parent now.
I have to lock in? Because some people don't. I've also known some people who get somebody pregnant, 18, 19, they still act like I am, 18, 19. Kids aren't met, they get pushed to the parent. So at least even when you step forward, it's like, okay, I have to do this. That's a unique thing.
I actually thank her every time we're together. But thanks to you, I stayed the course. Because if I didn't have a child, I don't know how things would have panned out.
You wouldn't be here today.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, I believe that.
Or I'd have more money and I wasn't buying nappies.
It's so funny because somebody was talking about the fact that, you know, when you say if you aren't married and you don't have kids, you might have more money. But people have found, especially in studies in the States, where when you have married people with children, they actually end up earning more because they're incentivized to because of their family.
They're driven.
Yeah. So it's like that actually ends up being your purpose. So that ends up being a moot point when you're talking about kids taking too much money. If anything, you might have been broke, bro.
You're right. What is your purpose?
Oh, I think that's something I've been trying to chase for a while. Yeah. Just as a backstory, my father died when I was about two and a half years old. My mother was pregnant with my sister about 6 months.
So meaning you don't have any real memory of
him? Nothing.
Okay.
Nothing. So I've created a father through books that I've read for like male figures that I think are great or people that have inspired me.
Books like?
So I'm somebody who was very much into fiction growing up because I like the images in my head. So I'd have the idea of whoever this protagonist is that they'd have, who was steadfast and would look out for people and was kind, but also be strong. Because I always was like, okay, you need to be strong to affect the world, but then you need to help the people who are at the bottom. So you can't be weak because people will crush you and then you won't be able to help those. But you can't be cruel because then you won't be able to relate to other people. And I think that's where like this journey and why my resume looks so complex is that I've almost been wanting to find a sweet spot where I feel, okay, this is where I am as a person. My older brother, who's 3 years older than me, so not a lot older, he was also somebody I'd have to look at. But it's this weird age where it's not a big enough gap where I feel like, okay, I'm going to listen to you. Where we'd fight, I'd be like, nah, come on. At some age, you're 2 years older than me.
Yes.
And then you get 1 year, but we just have this friction. So it was almost a begrudging, like, okay, fine, you're my older brother, but I could take you. And then puberty hit.
If I didn't have to respect you, I'd take you down.
Yeah, because I'm like, I've seen you tripping and falling, my brother. Yes. You're not that cool. Like, because when you're in your father, you're a hero. But when I've seen you falling, I'm like, I know you're not. You tell me not to do something, I've seen you do it. Yeah. But he's telling me from learning it and going, you don't want to do that. But I'm like, but you had the chance to learn. So then I'd fall flat on my face and then be like, I told you so. And I'd be like, oh, okay, but like, why? So it was that weird friction and then, of course, building it up and then seeing people. I always say Will Smith is somebody I always used to think was absolutely amazing. Seeing him on like The Fresh Prince because he came and he was almost into this adopted family who had a lot of money. And I was like, wow, that would be such a great way to be. And he's so charming and charismatic. And I almost pieced together what I would ideally want to be as like a man in this world. But my mother also played a very big part. And I think she was balancing having
three. She did well, man.
Balancing having three kids. She was pregnant when my father passed. So she delivered everything without him there. Buried him while she was still pregnant.
Yeah.
My older brother is an orthopedic surgeon. So he's a doctor. He's done exceptionally well. I'm now also a doctor. I need to go finish specializing. My sister's also done her degree. And then she'd bring kids from the rural parts because she was a headmistress all together. And this was just one lady.
Yeah, guys.
And I always tell people, it's so funny to me when people go, oh yeah, okay, we hear it. Women are the bedrock of the... My brother, because of her, so many people are... she's accountants, people who are in business, because she was able to raise funds for them, or she brought them into our house to give them a structure so that they can learn in peace and quiet. Never asks to be lauded, never asks to be put on a pedestal. She's just like, well, that's what a mother does.
What's mom's name?
Judy. Judith and Keys.
Mom Judy. We I would like to take this opportunity to thank you. And also to thank your kids for not being selfish when you wanted to do what God called you to do. So this is me just saying thank you.
Thanks, Mom. Oh, she's gonna ma. Yabona, I've because she's gonna clip that. She's gonna have that on the phone. She's gonna play that thing because she's at church. She's Methodist church.
I don't mind being in the church WhatsApp group.
Apparently, this is gonna go up on the agenda, like Mom Judy, and they'll be like, "This is why she's part of the executive team."
Exactly. God. So yeah, I just wanted to thank you, Mom Jay, in case you don't hear it enough times.
Thank you.
She's done a good job, man.
Hey, listen,
she's three kids who are flying at their chosen. Paths.
Yeah.
Not every parent gets to see that.
No. And it's such a strange thing because they're families that we grew up with. So I went from a KwaZimago, which is like the rural areas, and then we went to a Kamalake, which is a township. And then that township is where my father had passed, but she was alone in that space. And I was just an exuberant kid. I was running around doing crazy things. And she realized there was too much potential for me to get in trouble. So she moves from to the suburbs, where it was like one or two black families that were there, and then it's predominantly white back in 1990. And so she knew I could run around on the streets, no car's going to run me over, I'm not going to get into any sort of bad situations. And then there were families that were literally next door neighbors who were similar to us, whose kids have passed in jail, just horrible instances that have happened to them. And we were literally the same kind of family, just that their environment. And for her to put us into that space, she had to work extra hours. We never saw her on holidays because she was marking papers to be able to get the mortgage for the house. I was in the suburbs. So every single chance I get, I thank God for her as a person.
We're still talking about your purpose.
Hey. Yeah. My purpose.
Yeah.
Very good question. I think my purpose at the end of the day, for me anyway, is to... It's like a dual thing. I want to show what... like from KwaZimago, KZN can do, but most importantly, I want to help people as best as I can. So for me, I always say the thing that connects the medicine, TV presenting, acting, everything else is that I love people, like the human condition. So I've seen them at their worst. You come in, car accident, you're sad. A lot of my colleagues, you die inside sometimes because you're just like, okay, come in, head, MVA, motorcycle injury, stab. So sometimes you need somebody who's going to sit here and be like, hey, man, how's it going? Good. And you can speak to somebody and they're not just a condition. But I've also seen people who've accolades. I've met Usain Bolt, who's been like somebody who I find incredibly inspirational, all sorts of celebrities who've done things at the highest level. And you can almost see the beauty of like when people are at their lowest and people are at their highest, and kind of what connects them. And for me, I just love being able to facilitate those discussions, but also to make people feel like they're amazing because of the work that they've done.
Is there any case you've dealt with, either at Casualty or Jay as a doctor, that reminded you of your own mortality?
Multiple. So I'm going to give you, I want to call them the top three, but like some of the, I'll give you two of like the lowest. So the first one, I was an intern. You come in with all the energy, the zeal of like wanting to effect change. And you're working in oncology, which is already tough because you know most people are going to pass. You try to make that pass, that transition easy or delay it. So there was a 16-year-old cancer in the blood and he was deteriorating quite quickly. And at the time, we didn't know what was wrong with him, but he was getting quite sick very quickly over the week. And I had worked the night before. I was on call and the colleague I had didn't like me to leave because when you're left alone, everything comes to you. It's a bit scary as a new person. Usually what you'd want to do is go home because you hit your 30-hour mark, whatever it may be. You're tired. And after a certain point, you're actually quite useless. You feel drunk because you haven't slept. So I'm like, cool. She doesn't like me to leave. I'll stay with her. We'll support each other. We're in the war, in the trenches. She ends up leaving at some stage. This is the funniest thing. She leaves me. I'm stuck there till 6. Since the night before, I was 6 a.m. in the morning, day after 6 p.m. I finally hand over this thing. We have a scan that we're going to do for this kid to check his chest because we're thinking that there's some sort of fluid in the heart potentially. And that's an emergency which we need to actually tap. So I eventually hand this over to my senior who's there, and I'm like, please follow up on it. Mm. Great, I'm exhausted, go home. And I'm sitting in my doctor's quarters, and I'm thinking, should I just follow up on the scan? But I'm like, if I don't sleep, I'm going to basically be going on 3 days, no sleep, and I'm going to be like a waste, because the very next day you push again and then you probably be on call. So I was like, it's fine. Let me go to sleep. I'll pass out. I passed out at about 8, woke up extra early that morning. I saw that there was a missed call from the hospital. I'm like, I'm sure they called him because I'm not on. Great. So I get in there. And the day before I'd actually left at that 6 o'clock, the mother had kind of been there and there was visiting hours. And in those visiting hours, you're supposed to see the child and then go. She was like, please, can you... And I was like, it's not with the rules, but I went and I spoke to the nurses and I was like, sister, listen, just as the favor, you know how he's been doing. She just wants to be with him. Maybe it'll also help. Just let her stay here and we can sort it out a bit later. So she was like, okay, So I go, and the morning I come in, I'm wanting to see the mother and just ask her how it went with the son. Literally 15 minutes prior to me arriving, the son had passed.
Yeah.
So the son had passed, and what had happened is we had had this information that was given to us, and because my senior colleague had been so busy, he hadn't had time to go fetch the results, so there was just some delay there in terms of being able to get it. But there might have then also been delay when it comes to being able to do the intervention, which was draining the fluid, because we found that there was fluid in the heart, and this was found at like 4 in the morning. So I get there, and the mother comes up to me, and she's just like, thank you so much. And I'm like, what? And she's like, he's passed, but I was there with him when he passed. And she's like crying, and I'm sitting there, and all I'm thinking is, oh no, he's gone. She's sad, but she's grateful that she was there. Yes. I'm in this weird place where I'm like, but we could have saved him, surely. Maybe if I'd stayed or like just waited, it's irrational, but like maybe we could have tried or pushed her. And she's just happy that she was there when her 16-year-old son passed. And I stood there and I'm going, this is my work. This person, I'm overwhelmed by these emotions. This is not a spreadsheet that doesn't balance. This is somebody who's passed. I'm trying to figure out what I could have done, how I could have optimized. She's just happy that there was some level of humanity that was there. The nurses were just like, hey,
that's what it is.
And it's this whole whirlwind that you're there where you go, if I was doing, I don't know, maybe accounting, I could just be like, we missed out on the stock market drop.
It's just a million
pound. Yeah. There's tears on me. I'm trying to console her. I'm feeling guilty. Like, maybe I should have just never left. Like, how much time should I stay in the hospital? Maybe I should just sleep in the hospital. Is this a thing for me? And there's a part of you that just wants to switch it off. Because if you can switch off, you can be a robot. If you're a robot, then you can just turn over numbers. You lose some, you win some. You won't sit at home and be affected by it. And I think that's the difficulty with a vocation, is that you can sit and think, if I hadn't left, if I just stayed, I know I've been at the hospital for 3 days, basically. But if I'd stayed a bit longer, maybe I could have done something. Maybe I could have fought, gotten the extra hour, and you just sit and it ruminates with you. And I think that's where I realized, okay, wow, I'm in this kind of a profession where if I allow that to get me down, I'll break.
Yes.
And then the second one, this one's going to be a lot more truncated, where I was like, okay, geez, this is the mortality of life and the difficulty that we live in. A mother came in. I was working in a smaller clinic around Joburg Central, and she was coming in running with a body. Beautiful 4-year-old boy. Like, absolutely adorable kid. She's holding him, and I can see he's in kind of rigor mortis. He's gone. She's crying. She hands him over to me, and she goes, please help him. Please. He's not waking up.
Yeah.
He's been gone. Like, I know he's been gone. I see it. I smell alcohol on her, right? So I'm like, that's a whole other. So I put him in, we close the curtains. We go through the routine, of course, because I think as a mother, you don't want me to just be like,
there's nothing I can
do. She's run from wherever she's run from. She's sweating. So we do it, close the curtain. And I tell her, listen, Ma, we can't bring him back. She screams. I've never heard somebody shriek. She rips like her shirt. All the other patients who are waiting there to be seen, just an absolute screaming. We're trying to move her. She's on the floor. Unfortunate story. She had been drinking. She left the this 3-4-year-old with the older 8-year-old, 8-9-year-old. The kid took a paraffin bottle that looked like cool drink, drank it, died. She came back late, had been drinking the whole night. He's dead.
Mm.
Obviously, neglect, not great parenting.
Mm.
But obviously, she loves him.
Yeah.
So like these two things where you're upset because he didn't need to, but you're hurting because she's in clear pain.
Absolutely.
And you just go, life is just, and you're experiencing all of this in your early 20s. And you're scolding 40-year-olds who are having kids. And you just go, it's an insane, insane profession.
Is there anything in your life journey that you feel has prepared you for all that you've had to endure so far? Or are you bobbing and weaving through it all?
Yeah, we're Mayweather. We're Philly Shell. I honestly think losing my father is probably the initial point where I realized like we could all die.
Yes.
Losing him made me realize my mother could pass away when she's going to Mark and I don't see her often. It gave me a bit of a complex because I'd have this ritual. I'd say she'd come back home. But she'd also be fully able-bodied. Mm. She'd have her, because I realized like if she did come back home and she was paralyzed, things would be harder. Mm. So I had this, the only kind of safety I could have was saying this little prayer, and I'd almost make it into a chant where I go, because if she passes and I'm an orphan, doesn't matter how smart I am, who's going to be able to put me through the things I need to do?
Mm.
And I think that's where I went, okay, life is just, and for a period of time, I just honestly thought anything and everything could kill me.
Yes.
Because like you could die at any point. But then I started realizing, okay, then just be happy with whatever days you have. And that's when you just start going, okay, take for granted the smallest things that you have. I had a podcast before and people started laughing at me because my mother once promised me to get me a push pop. And my mother was, it pushed pop to her was a sweet, you're yes, sweet.
Yes.
And it was my birthday. And I said, the only thing I wish from you, mom, is push pop because I saw it on the TV.
Yes.
Does she not come back after school there in primary school? Ma, did you get the push pop? She gave me Babalu, 2 Babalus.
Oh, wow.
Babalu. I've been telling my friends, guys, Lufene, push pop.
Mama, you had one job.
I don't get that. Tell her to this day, brother. I love you so much. Got a little push pop.
Yeah.
She gave me this Babalu. I've been telling all my friends, guys, I'm going to come back tomorrow with the push pop.
Yeah.
I'll be able to lick and then save it. Because I'm like, you can push it in and out.
Yeah.
Gave me the Babalu. I still came to school with that little Babalu. I separated it with the gooey stuff. And but I also just like laugh because it was not too long ago. I finally found the push pop and I had it. And people just think it's ridiculous. But I'm like, it might cost, I don't know, whatever, how much it costs now and I can afford it. But for my child version.
The inner child.
It's like, oh, you're somebody you can get a push pop. Like you've. So it's not Bugatti, millions of, it's that child thought the hero was the guy who can bring him the push pop. And now I've become the guy who can give him the push pop.
Yes.
And I go, cool. So there is actually a point where I can be proud of myself.
You know, it's another thing I preach all the time that a lot of the damage a lot of us adults might be going through is simply that there's a child that is still waiting on a promise that was never fulfilled. And the sooner you can identify which promise was not fulfilled for which part of your childhood, and you can go back and fix that, the better adult you can be and possibly even a better parent. But we don't take the moments to even go there or to admit that there's a child in here who's still hurting. Never take the moment. And for me, or for you getting that push pop, might be the difference between how many other people's lives you saved on that day or that week. Because you're that much happier.
It's honestly, you can, I try to even like make it academic. That kid in me was just excited.
Yes. Yeah.
Like I pushed it through and I did. And I'm going, my brother, you have got this big pageant award, stuff that what you've won things at a level most people can only do. Men's health covers, whatever. I'm sitting there with this push pop. And these people are like laughing and they're like, why? I was like, it feels like I thought it would feel.
Yes.
It tastes like I thought it would taste. And I go, this is actually what, and you've actually made it so beautifully succinct, is that you need to identify those things because they also make you feel like you've done something in this world.
Yes.
Your dream has been fulfilled.
Absolutely.
So sometimes we adopt other people's dreams, big house, fancy car. You don't really care that much about it. The thing you fell in love with would generally were those things when you were young.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, push pop.
What does mom tell you guys about dad?
It's funny because when she describes them, I see her lighting up. And sometimes I do feel a bit sad because I have no connection to it from an emotional standpoint. Mm. I just know that he gave me the seed, the egg, and that's him. But she describes somebody who had friends, who was very boisterous. Mm. He was a lot lighter than me. They used to call him Umlungu because he was so light. Yeah. And even in the photos, the black and white ones, you see his hair and like his beard, but then he's quite light. My brother looks more like him. And he was somebody who was into hospitality. He was also into academics, but he was just a guy who liked to be with his friends.
Mm.
And I could see that because a lot of his friends would come to us when we'd move and get us like a bike or would get us, I remember the first time I had some of the really good fancy meat was from a friend of his, not even like blood relative, a friend would come every 3 months or so, just check years after he'd passed. I was like, wow, what a man to still have somebody who's a boy of his to still come and just make sure we're fine, to buy us bikes, our first bikes with like training wheels. It's like, okay, this is clearly somebody who was about camaraderie, about friendships. So in my mind, I just imagine he was somebody good enough to have her feeling enamored because I think she's so amazing and she never remarried, never dated anybody else, keeps the same ring. I was like, okay, this must have been the guy. He wasn't even tall. She was taller than him. So I was like, this man must have been smooth with whatever he had, because with all those things, she was still able to talk about him like he was the best guy she ever came across.
Isn't there a sadness in when our parents lose their life partner, the person they thought they spent the rest of their lives with, and they choose not to date again? Or if they are, you'll never find out.
This is the thing.
Because for me, I've got an aunt that lived that. That husband passed away, and we've never known another man in her life. And we're like, what, 30, 40 years on?
Yeah.
And in my mind, I sometimes just wanted to say to mom, why don't you ask her today? What's going on? Because it's not my place to say, how date
as the child. Yeah, as the child.
I need a malume.
As the child, yeah.
Do you guys have those conversations with mom?
I will be honest with you. I think as a child, you feel secure in that. That's my mother. You don't want like another person coming in. So for the longest time, I was just happy that I wasn't having to deal with some man who I was not going to have to fight. But now that I think about it with my maturity, I go, I think it would be great if you found somebody and if you were able to kind of engage with him. And I've honestly never had the sit down discussion with her, and it's probably long overdue. But I almost make, for me, it was almost looking at her and going, wow, that's a love. Like you stay with someone for that long. But then I also recognize that you can love somebody else.
Yes.
Even without necessarily tarnishing the image of this person.
Absolutely.
You as a person can go love and be intimate with someone. And I go, oh, wow, that is actually a whole world I feel she should have the opportunity to have. And it's something that I've more and more thought about as I've gotten older, that it would actually be great if she did find somebody. Please don't look in the camera and tell her to do that. She might actually do. Don't leave it at what you, the previous video is fine. Don't, hey, Tinder, hey, please. I saw that sparkle in your eye. You looked right. I was like, I'm about to have fathers coming in here.
You think you know me?
Please, I don't. Hey.
Mama, uncle in here.
I am now. Fresh, please. I cannot have the whole of South Africa now DMs being students. I cannot.
Hashtag Uncle Fama. Uncle Fama.
Now he's coming here. Look at me. I am the father now.
Oh, flip. Anyway, we are running out of time.
Yes, sir.
You've been off TV for how long?
Wow, we went off top billing
7 years ago almost.
2018, yeah, about 7 years ago. Seven, 8 years ago.
You just come in.
So we've just, literally it was about 2 years, so it was about a year and a half.
Yes.
And we'd just come in, you know, we'd done the thing, we were winning, things were going right, and then chiki-chiki, it stopped. And then I was like,
Working in medicine and healthcare, you learn to deal with loss.
Yes, yes.
But losing a TV show is a different kind of loss.
Especially because, can I tell you what it is? Top billing has always been what top billing is, right?
Yes.
It's iconic. It was 27, going on 30 years or so of having it. And and you get there and you're seeing people like meeting you. It was patients. It was all these faces that you see. Bobby was our presenter. And now you go, okay, I've done it.
Like I've
entered into the top level of presenting. And then almost 2 years later, like, ah, yeah, you're starting to, now we must. And you go, but it, I thought, and it, it was a, it, Top Billing is phenomenal. You stay at the best places. You meet some of the most incredible people. But it almost felt like it was cut short. And now, since we're coming back, it's at least getting that excitement again. That, okay, great, we get to actually see the best of the good life. But having been in the industry doing other work, I think it's also been really great to know that the kinds of people like you, for instance, you are who you are. And I always say there's like this duality. For those who don't know, I actually knew Fresh from Planet Fitness. He was there. He was working out. Big daddy, big papa pump. You see people and you go, oh, these are like a real relatable people. And then when we see them doing their work, it's almost like you become these superheroes. But some of the strongest people in the industry who've lost it are real people who just are really exceptional at their work.
Sure.
And so I've always wanted that to be like my North Star, to still be the same person, not to be a horrible person or like an asshole in any way. To be real, but to also try to be as exceptional as I can in the craft that I do. And that for me is giving me an opportunity to now show the stuff that I've learned over the time.
Did you mourn losing Top Billing at the time?
Yeah, it's really sad because I was really excited. There was many things that I was already imagining. It was social media. Before social media, you could put the best of the stuff that was there.
Yes.
And I was really keen to like immerse myself in that world and to have it pulled so quickly, because we found out and then a month later it was like...
It was gone.
So it wasn't even like we were like in a year's time. It was like, okay, within a month it's going to be off and then you guys are going to be done. And you go, oh, so what next now? Yeah, it's like, do I put into it? And they're like, no, that's how shows work.
Go back to hospital.
Yeah, it's like, well done. It's like, you did it. It wasn't you. I almost wish I could have been fired, because if I'm fired, I'm like, I'm not good enough. You know, if he's just like, ah, well, you're not good. Bye-bye.
You can go. Rocking.
Yeah, bye-bye. It's bye-bye. Yeah. It's like, you are really great. You've got a great voice. You're able to, but the show's going. So, oh, are you going to put me on another show? No. So, bye. And you just go, and then?
Top Billing being back now. Had they not called you back, what would have hurt more? Pulling the plug 7 years ago or not being called back this season?
I think, I'm going to be honest with you. This is me being vulnerable. Not being called up makes it feel like, you know, it's what I'm telling you. It's the show not being there is the show.
Yes.
You not getting called up, but the show is there. It's like, how do you even put it? It's, okay, I'm moving to another country. We can't date. I don't do long distance. Cool. You come back to the country. 2 months later, come back and you go, hi. I go, you're back now. I no, thank you, sir.
Yeah.
So you don't want to date me. So you're here. Everything's,
so it was me.
Yeah, so it was me.
Yeah.
So that's, so it was actually me. It wasn't that we were going to have this. You just don't want to be with me.
Sure.
So now I do internal work of like, okay, maybe I'm not as great as I think I am. But at the same time, I think for me, it's become less of an ego thing as well, because I go, I really want Top Billing to be great. And I think we've moved so quickly. And you also attest, there's so many different mediums that people want to consume content with.
Yeah.
I want it to transform into a thing that it was back in the day, but with how it needs to look today. So
absolutely,
on all platforms.
Yes.
So I have no ego in terms of like me being at the forefront. I want the show to be the powerhouse that it was.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. But yes, I would have, it would have sucked. I would have been like, right, guys.
Where were you when you got the call that we're riding again at dawn?
I got a message and they were like, hey, because we launched, we did a pre-show to make the announcements for the show.
Yes.
And I saw it and I was like, okay, pre-show for the show. And then I go, okay, so you shoot the show and you make the announcement, but you're still waiting to hear that you'll be on the show.
Oh, yes. Because
it could have been a thing of like, okay, you know when you have a rocket and then there's the jet propulsion and then eventually that one falls off to allow that one to go into space. So you're like, I don't want to be this one. I want to be the main
one.
Yeah, I don't want to be the propellant. I want to be part of, I don't want to fall
off. I want to be
the
rocket. Yeah. Rocket man.
Exactly. Yeah. You don't want it to be like, oh, they launched the show and then they were gone. Okay.
Yeah.
So when they finally were like, and we want you back on the next season, was just after we had launched it in Cape Town and they were like, okay, let's start shooting the inserts. It wasn't like a thing of, oh, you're in. They're like, obviously, we're going to shoot inserts. And I was like, yeah, we are. Okay, thank you. And not everybody got the call up, but some did. So
sure.
Yeah, it's good.
What do you say to people who are so old school, they feel like doctors must just be doctors, be professional at what you do, don't be dabbling in media? I'm asking you this because I went through it when I was at law school. That it was especially in a small country like Bots.
Of course.
Where every lecturer said to me, as lawyers, we don't prance around at night. That was one thing my L101 lawyer, my L101 lecturer said that to me after there was a nice big article about me because I just started on radio. Ooh. I just started on radio. Now, I was DJing.
Now he's going to look at your marks.
But I'm still first year law. And he said to me that you must decide what you want to do. We don't do this. And obviously things have evolved. You're finding that more professionals are also in entertainment. Mm. And often it's because I did this for mom and dad. Now I'm doing this for my soul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always say, I think even within the acting space, so this is just like a random detour, but people had approached, hey, do you want to act this? And I said, you know what? I would love to, but can I just have an incubation period? So I took about 2 years from 2020 and just did Shakespeare. I did it with Dorothy Ann Gould, Graham Wilson, who like started off with Generations. Mm. And I just did time with it because I respect each and every craft.
Yes.
I think a lot of people don't. They go, I can speak, I can be on radio.
Yes.
I'm like, brother, you don't understand the technical components. You don't understand pulling topics from the net. You don't understand transition. But like, there's so many things. People think just because you can speak, you can do anything.
Yes.
And so I respect each individual discipline and space. So I say, if you want to do it, please go ahead. But also understand that people have every right to be skeptical.
Mm.
And then you have to prove that you have competence.
Yes.
You can't just be, I'm pretty, so I should be on screen. Mm. You can't hit your mark. You can't remember lines. You shouldn't be. So if somebody goes, you're not good, you can't be like, but I'm beautiful. And no, you're not competent in this particular field, but you're able to get people's attention. You just can't keep it.
So are you finding you need to almost doubly exert yourself?
Triple, quadruple. I'm generally always in shape because at any point in time, somebody goes, take off your sock, Mr. Three Men's Health Covers.
Yes.
I memorize things exceptionally well, which is great from like medical schools. I need to know if somebody goes, okay, we'll go off script, but then we'll go back on script. You need to be able to, because as soon as you make a mistake, they go, oh yeah, that's because you come from Bo Med School. And you think you can do. It's, the margin of error is so small.
Mm.
And then people just go, oh, you're this. And you get in castings, auditions, that's same thing. It just goes, now we know you for this.
So how does that pressure affect you at a mental level?
I'm a lot harder on myself than I should be. I know that. I ruminate on things. So I think about things for extended periods for a while where I go, how could I?
You're always diagnosing.
Yeah. I'm always, we do post-mortem. We open the body. We go, what could have been done better?
Exactly.
But then you also always try to not make it too intense for people.
Yes.
Because in this industry, people like people who are laid back.
Yeah.
But they don't like people who are incompetent. So you have to be laid back, but on the ball.
Yes.
You have to be able to make it look easy, but it shouldn't be easy.
Mm.
It's this thing where you balance all of it, and then at the end of the day, you need to be like an easy energy to go with. Mm. You can't be neurotic and be like, So it's, you play this game constantly in your mind, and sometimes I have to tell myself, just calm down and just trust yourself.
Do you ever find that because generally you are a hard worker, that I might be in an industry where I am not the main staring in that industry, but I work so hard, I know I will outperform a lot of them, but I will still dim my light so that I don't out-staring them in their staringness.
Yes.
I hope I'm making sense.
Yeah, boy, no, that's staring. You are staring in the right direction with that. It's unfortunately sometimes an industry of egos.
Yes.
And the one thing you don't want to do is step on an ego or push against an ego that has power.
Yes.
Because then you suffer.
Yes.
And to correct some people is okay because they like correction, and to correct others is a way to never get work. So you do the dance of, I didn't know that. Was that on page 20? Meanwhile, I know all the page. I can tell you exactly when you go, yes, of course. Wow. Smart, a little bit of fluffing, a little bit of, because you it's one of the 48 laws of power, never outdo the master.
Yes.
So you never want to make them look bad. And there's certain people who you can tell are confident in themselves and they don't need that. You can be like, oh yes, of course, because you're like, oh no, I have the XP, the experience. And then the others where you go, now, sure, yes. Oh, I didn't know that. Really? That's what it is. Oh, okay. okay, because I can't correct you in front of the camera, it will, your job will tank. And that's the softer skills where you do the dance in this industry. And I think because I'm a hard worker, I've had to tell myself, listen, you don't need to show everyone that you've worked hard.
Yes.
Sometimes you just need to be quiet. Yeah. And that will progress you far, far further than, oh, if it were done, when it's done, well, it were done quickly. If this assassination, oh, you did Shakespeare. Yes, of course. Mm. No, just, I'm happy to be here. I act sometimes. Mm. Yeah.
You serious.
Know. Yeah, yeah, serious. I act. You
tell
know.
Me more.
Ah, you know, I, what's that English word you use? Resplendent. Oh, yes. What? Resplendent. Oh, resplendent. Meanwhile, it's a whole thesaurus in my mind. Because you don't want to be threatening sometimes.
But isn't that the cheat code for life, though? Mm-hmm. That if we all knew when to use the power we have and when to shut up.
And that is where you learn through maturity and wisdom.
Yes.
That not everything needs a hammer.
Yes.
Sometimes you just need a soft touch.
Yes.
Because when you're young, you go in, I'm the best. I'm good at this. Come on, this person's this. Mm. And then you go, oh, when you get older, you also want to be able to say, because sometimes, and I say this even in sports, you might not jump the highest, but you've had enough experience to know when to strike.
Yes.
And that wisdom is what will give you longevity. Because athleticism doesn't last forever. You get older. And once you get older, what you want to have is the knowledge to strike when you need to strike and calm down when you need to calm down. Yeah.
I'm very pro a man must be manly.
Mm.
Just don't apply it everywhere.
Because that's how you get killed.
But and also getting killed aside, you need to know when to be a gentle person.
Mm.
You need to know when to apply almost a feminine touch to things.
The balance.
But often we are so obsessed with I'm a hammer and everything is a nail that we end up losing ourselves, losing people we love, losing our jobs, and then thinking the world is against you.
Exactly.
But you're a hammer and all the nails don't like hammers.
It's so funny. I think for me, that's also like a lesson. Growing up, because I was trying to find like the manly version or like a man, an ideal, I was a bit more of an aggressive kid.
Mm.
And I realized that aggression also came from fear. So I think sometimes when you want to engage with something, the easier thing is to just fight.
To fight
like,
it.
Yeah, yes. Throw a punch. If you're scared, if you think somebody might do something to you, don't even talk it out. Just attack. And it's what you were saying. Everybody then gets hurt. Mm. Everybody burns.
Mm.
And if you end up trying to have that outlet as alcohol, drugs, sex, whatever you think will be that outlet, instead of actually engaging with the softer side of things or being able to blend that into kind of the stronger with the maybe more soft feminine and the masculine energies. I think that is where you'll find a good balance, because most men want to act like they don't have a feminine component.
Yes.
And that's where you get issues where I've had many discussions around gender-based violence and concepts around it. And that's because a lot of men, instead of speaking about emotions, they push them down. And if you push against them, they push even harder against you.
And it becomes a who's got the bigger balls.
Exactly.
Mm.
And unfortunately, culturally, that's also been something that I've found within a lot of, especially like rural parts, they tend to just quiet, suffer in silence, and then explode.
What have you had to unlearn as a man?
That you, just because you're the bigger, stronger person, doesn't mean that you are somebody then that should be number one.
Ah, yes.
Put ahead. Doesn't mean, the concept of get the biggest piece of meat isn't just because you're a man. It should be because we've provided, and the person who's dishing up feels that you deserve that meat that you've had, as opposed to like just dominating people. Because I used to see that from uncles, from the kind of the male figures, abasekhaya, where they'd be like, indoda and azindoda. If heads don't bow, then it's disrespectful. And I find that you're just always in fights then. That's actually my other thing. I just realized, because if this person doesn't, but now you must fight and exert. And then if this doesn't, you're fighting. I'm like, how many times? Because you'll find somebody who actually fights better than you. And now you're on the floor, broken nose.
And then what?
And now who you are, because you've been beaten up in front of your kids or in front of your family, now you're like, oh, I'm useless now. Now you beat them up because they could never beat you up.
Yeah.
And I go, so what's, if I'm hard all the time, when do I get the manicure or the massage? Or Be like, nah,
or do I get them and hide them?
Yeah, exactly. Now I have to be telling. I remember.
Now you're walking around like this, hiding your nails.
I promise you, but I like somebody took off his shoes. It was one of my friends, and we were like, and he took it off, and he's like, brother, why are your toenails shining? And yeah. He's like, oh, guys, you know, I think it looks nice. And I'm like,
and you should never have to explain yourself.
I had a friend tell me why I have flowers in my apartment. I was like, because I like they look pretty.
Exactly.
They're like, it's flowers.
It's a colorful tree.
I like looking at nice things. Yeah. And he's looking at you like, imbali. Yeah. And I was like, yes, it makes the space look, the space. Yes. Are you an interior designer? I'm like, guys, can do what?
Mm.
So I can do all the manly stuff. You know, I do boxing. You know, I train. You know, all that stuff. You're like, don't mess with Fez. I put flowers. You're soft. Joburg. He's like, Joburg. I'm like, so I cannot have flowers. Me, I must just sit in my room, Ganji. Yeah. With just black duvet covers and just be here because I'm a man. Yeah. I was like, boys, come on.
You know, speaking of getting the bigger piece of meat, because often if we're eating at family events, the kids will ask me if I want a dish out.
Yeah.
So because on my mom's side of the family, there were 10 kids, but the firstborn was my aunt Rosina.
Doing the things.
And she was a matriarch of note, but hers was simple. The kids eat first. If there's any food left over, then the adults will eat.
Really?
So, and I've adopted that myself. And I often encourage that. And her argument was, we've been eating meat for so long. Let the kids enjoy some meat.
That is such a good way to think.
You know what I mean? So for me, it's always that. So even, I cook at least 2-3 times a week.
Yeah.
I always tell the kids, dish out and whatever's left, I'll have whatever's left. Because for me, it's the kids must eat. They must get the nourishment.
Because they're going to grow, obviously. Yeah. They have a direct correlation.
Yes, I'm the breadwinner and everything else. But I want kids who are well-nourished and fed and happy.
And again, you know the mental fortitude to be able to think in that way and not just water off your back. Because a lot more people want to be like, well, you need to see that I'm
the man.
I do this, direct correlation with the food. And you're like, hey, listen, I'm never hungry when I go to bed. Mm. So why am I... And kids see that, and I've generally found, even with me, because I'd see how my mother would be selfless, and in the beginning, you'd push against it, but I intuitively go, that was my example.
Yes.
And so for me, if somebody were to say something like, oh, this is what a woman does, I'm like, my brother, I've seen my mother doing harder things than this.
Yes.
A woman does not ABC. Women can do whatever they want, because I've literally had firsthand viewing of somebody who's done phenomenal stuff. So it never even phases me.
Yeah.
But I've never had somebody tell me that the kids eat first.
No, the kids must eat.
Makes so much sense.
If there's food left, then we'll eat. Like last night, I wasn't hungry.
Mm.
So they ate, I had a fruit.
Yeah.
Also because I'm on a calorie deficit and I don't eat past certain time.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll just have a fruit and I'll be fine.
And your body does adapt.
Your body adapts very fast.
Yeah. But they're still growing. They actually need it. There's a direct correlation with their cognitive development, physical development, and they will probably be hungrier more consistently than you are.
And we need to raise kids who understand that, yes, I'm a man, but I'm also a human being that needs to have certain skills.
Yeah.
So every morning when I wake up and my 10-year-old has made his bed, I smile. And he wakes up before me. And the first thing he does is he makes his bed.
Wow.
And I don't know that he'd be making his bed if he'd never seen me making the bed.
Yeah.
So it was very important for him to see me making the bed so that it's normal.
Exactly.
I do the dishes so that he understands that dishes are dirty, they must be done.
Yeah.
It's not a girl's role.
Mm.
It's not a gender
and that
assignment.
It's so much easier to raise a good kid than to fix a broken man because of the fact that these are things that... And I tell people all the time, half the things that people think are impressive about me, like I work out virtually all the time. Mm. It's just a habit. It's not even something I get up, I'm not going, should I... I'm already heading to the gym.
It's your lifestyle.
Yeah, it's who I am. So when someone's like, oh, okay, Mr. Tryhard, I'm like, this is the most effortless.
This is all I know.
Yeah, this is what I do. Like, you think it's hard. You're like, oh, Mr. Tryhard.
I'm sure that days you wake up and you're like, why am I doing push-ups?
I promise you, I get up and I'll tell somebody, somebody asked me, what is a bad day for you? If I get up and I just feel horrible on the day, I'll probably do an extra 30 minutes. An extra 30 minutes? Yeah. No, I'm already on the bike.
Yeah.
Like the bike is happening. I'm on the bike. I'm training. I will train. I'm crying. And I'm like, life is so hard.
Yes.
I'm here. Yes. It's my life.
You know, funny, on Monday, we had a topic on a radio show about what is your Monday non-negotiable?
Mm.
Because it's a Monday.
Yeah.
And the team were shocked when I told them, my non-negotiable on a Monday is I must put in a gym session. Because if I can't put it in on Monday, on Tuesday, I'll have an excuse. Yeah, on Wednesday, the train is gone. So for me, if I don't get on the horse on Monday,
then you know
I'm going to have excuses.
Yeah.
And we don't realize that excuses are like tequila. One leads to the next.
And again, I think people make it too. We live in a culture now, especially yeah. social media, where everybody wants to flex a thing.
Yes.
I go to the gym yeah. 7 to 9 times in the week. Some of the stuff, my friends are like, why don't you start making videos? I'm like, of what?
Yeah.
The way you eat, the way you train. I'm like, why? This is yeah. just what I. Oh, but it's so different. I'm like, no. I have a thing, which is funny enough. It's a hashtag, never miss a Monday.
Yes.
Because of that exact ideology.
Yes.
The Monday is the day I tell myself, listen, Friday can jiggy jiggy, but Monday,
yeah.
Me and Monday are like this. You Absolutely. Know, I'm not missing a Monday yeah. because I know that's where the momentum starts, be it moving forward or not. Yes. That's where the momentum will start. So I'm just like, that's just my life. And I don't think it necessarily needs me to tell all of you because I live it.
Because what's next? I'm taking a poo.
Yeah, thank you. I'm like, guys, I didn't knock somebody out today. I'm not out here uppercutting people on a regular. Why should I post that? And they're like, no, but what you're doing is unique. For you,
yeah.
For me, I'm like, hey, guys, I'm at the gym at 6.
This is all I know.
Yeah, I'm at the gym at 6. I'm going to do bench, do 10, and then 12. I'm like, I don't know what else to tell you. Monday, I'll tell you the same thing at the bench. Do you want to watch this? Is this what you think is entertainment?
Exactly.
It's, yeah, 100%.
You do a lot of things and you do a lot of things well.
I hope I do.
What do you suck at?
There's so many. So I'm trying to get my chest elo up. There's just so many things. To be honest with you, I'm so critical of myself. I find so many things that I'm not particularly happy with. But if I'm passionate about something, and I think this is where we probably resonate. If I'm really passionate about something, I nerd out about it. And I nerd out about it because I think we live in a time where excellence is not really as encouraged as it used to be. Most people just want to say so I'm an entrepreneur, I made this,
But you're like, dabbling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have seven businesses. How are you able to stretch yourself and do exceptionally well at 7 things? I'm an influencer. I'm like, okay, for me, if I say I'm a thing and I'm always scared to say it, as soon as I say it, I feel like you should be able to go, okay, tell me, you say that you're a doctor. What's DNA? Deoxyribose nucleic acid. Yes. Okay, cool. You say that you're an actor. Can you tell me you're blocking it? Or it's this, what's the business here? Because if I say it and I am not those things, then I'm just playing with words.
Yes.
Then I can say, me, I'm Superman.
And because we've almost normalized half-assing things, I call it just enoughing.
That's a great word.
And there's a conversation I have with school kids that you need to want to be the best at what you do all the time. Just enoughing it is not good enough. If they tell you that you need 50% to pass this module, aim for 90% anyway. Aim for 100%. Know that if you got 50, it's because it was fucking hard, not because you did not prepare for it. But because we've normalized mediocrity, we've normalized half-assing things, just enoughing things, that we will never be the best at what we do because it's normal for things to be mediocre.
And the only way you can push an industry or push a certain sector
is
by actually pushing and seeing where the boundaries are.
Yeah.
Because if you don't do that, then we stay at where we are. We'll never reinvent ways of doing something. You'll never be able to see how many gigs can you do in a week.
Yeah.
You know, some people are like, okay, like how do you work sometimes? There've been times where I've, like say in the media space, I'll work in Cape Town, then we'll do something like Links till 2 in the morning, then I have a flight at 5, and then I've heard friends who were in the musical space, like especially the DJ life is something where I feel like people, they'll go, oh, you have time. Why aren't you getting more gigs? Yeah, I do one in the night. Guy will be like, I do 3. I go from here to here to here. 3. Like, how do you know where your boundaries are if you're not pushing?
Exactly.
If you're not seeing what you can do, if you're not trying to, because then what will happen is the brass ring doesn't elevate and then you're just one of the hundreds and hundreds. And I go, that's where I see people who have longevity. They're always questioning, okay, so what? How can I infuse this a bit more, infuse a bit there? And that's where you get the longevity. And the people who are just happy, even within the modeling space, people are like, I'm a model because I'm within a modeling agency. Are you working? Are you getting paid for it? So then what's the use of being a model who doesn't get paid? You're unemployed still. So like push, work out, see the image. And we're in an era where if you do push back on people, people are like, why are you attacking him? Why are you being... I'm like, it's not coming from a hateful place. It's coming from a, are you just okay? Like, merits are great.
Are you happy with...
Like, you showed up. Like, I'm on the team. You never play. But I'm on the team, on the bench.
With being Mr. Congeniality.
Yeah. You know? And I'm not saying that anything's wrong with that, but come on.
Yes, we are. We're servants.
It's like, yes. Yes, we... Our country will not be better unless we try to be better.
Yeah. And it's another conversation I have with my kids.
Yeah.
That whatever marks you bring from school, I just need to know that you gave every single thing that you had.
Mm.
Then I won't complain. And but if you're failing, but I can point to you that because you were playing Fortnite, because you went with your friends, because you slept, because you didn't study, then we're going to have a problem. But if I know you gave everything, I'll never complain about your marks.
Can I tell you what's crazy?
Yeah.
And
we're finishing
on a tangential.
They're shouting at us.
Yeah, I know. I can tell. And this is the final point, just to speak on that. I think sometimes...
I'm with a doctor, guys. And
yeah, sorry,
doctor's
guys.
Orders.
Hey, Sakoloma. Hey.
Doctor's orders.
I think sometimes people are scared to fail.
Yes.
And what you... By saying that, you almost allow somebody to get an outcome that isn't necessarily positive, but to know that you've emptied out the tank.
Yes.
Because sometimes you're scared, you empty out the tank and you fail, and then people go, you failed.
Mm.
But then I go, my brother, I saw you sleepless nights trying and trying and trying. Mm. You might have failed.
Yes.
But you gave everything.
Yes.
What more can I ask?
Mm.
And then you go, okay, that actually is what people want.
Mm.
They don't want somebody who's kind of scared, then can be like, I didn't try that hard.
Yeah.
If I tried hard, and that if will go to you till you die, because you go, if I tried hard, I could have been the best.
Mm.
Then you go, okay, but it's useless now. You're 90, you're about to go, you're too scared to fail.
Mm. It's like, you know, it's like with KPIs at work, that often companies will give you KPIs, whatever the KPI is, but they can never prove to you or show you how they made sure the environment allowed for you to optimally deliver and perform, that the KPIs were either hit or not hit.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to hold our kids the same as accountable as that.
Yeah.
That these are my KPIs for you as my child, but I will also show up for you.
Exactly.
Because often we punish kids for doing things we did not tell them were wrong in the first place.
Mm, exactly.
Or for failing at things. We never even told them that this is part of your KPIs as a child.
And all you get is the feeling of guilt because you didn't do the thing you didn't know you needed to do.
Exactly. So I'm giving you parenting advice in advance.
Thank you. One day is one day. Listen, from you, from 19 years old. That's decades worth. That's decades worth.
Hey, dude, I've been a dad for a very long time.
That's insane.
My guy, we are out of time.
Thank you so much.
Top Billing, where do people catch Top Billing currently?
So Top Billing is going to be coming out. We're going to be on S3.
Yes.
It's going to be coming through at 7 o'clock on Thursdays, and then we're going to have repeat on Sundays at 1.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's also going to be on SABC 1 on Tuesdays at 9 o'clock. So you'll be able to see it. Enjoy it, you know, SABC 1, S3. Finally, we're showing the best that we can bring. Sure. And there are going to be some new faces. I think people are going to be very excited.
We have a beauty queen.
Yeah. And there's...
We're the beauty king.
Wow.
So,
also,
Mr. and Miss.
Can I say, Usine, who was doing TikTok billing on TikTok, he was one of the beating hearts that really allowed the show to keep going, even though we weren't on national broadcasters, because the show had resonated with him. And he's really young. He came up with kind of the TikTok billing, had his own kind of presenter search format. And I say... That's how you know something's strong. When kids who don't remember your Michael Moles because they weren't born are able to get that feeling of excellence and create something like that.
Take so we're working anyway.
With, yeah, I promise you. And I can't wait for people to see him because I think he has so much potential. He has so much going for him. So that's where I go. I want Top Billing to grow, and he's going to be one of the people who are going to steer it.
Sure.
The youth, absolutely amazing.
In closing,
what
does the good doctor fear? It's your biggest fear.
I used to fear dying, if I'm honest.
Mm.
But now I've become a bit more
comfortable. Now you can resuscitate yourself.
Yeah, hey, listen.
I'm sure you walk around with a defibrillator in your pocket.
Just in case. These incorrect ways of doing it. And, I think my biggest fear is probably dying with a tank that's half full. I kind of want it to just be empty.
Yes.
And there's so many things I want to do. And half the time people laugh at me. So I never tell them outright.
Mm.
I'm like, I have a note page in my phone so that when I'm holding whatever award, I can come back and be like, 2008, I told you. My brother laughed at me randomly when I told him, hey, man, I'm going to go into the space and I'm pretty sure I'm going to be able to us after.
Yes.
And he says, I bet you won't. And I was like, I bet you I will. We've bet. He's lost the bet. And so now I'm going, well, there you go. Because he's like, no, I'm a new in medicine. What are you talking about? I was like, I'll get us after one day.
I was going to say, how competitive are you as two brothers who are both doctors?
Exceptionally. He literally laughed at me. He said, my brother, you'll never touch. I said, my brother, I will. Yes. 4 years later. And I was like, there you go. And he literally, he's the best brother because he hates that he lost, but he loves that I won.
Absolutely.
Which is that he hates losing, but he loves me winning.
And maybe that was the plan, to push you to win.
Yeah, he knows how to push.
The reverse psychology of it.
I'll say this, I do love you. Yeah. I don't say it often, but I do love you.
But would you give him mouth to mouth if he was dying?
Listen, you can do it like this. So just, if for those of you at home, get a good seal and... It doesn't have to be lip to lip.
You don't have to lose your brother's
Yeah, I don't have to be lip to lip. If you feel uncomfortable, just a seal and then...
Oh, fuck. When last did you cry?
Losing my aunt 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've lost a lot of people in the family, unfortunately. It used to be a thing in the back of my head, but I thought, like, as a family, we might have been cursed.
Yes.
Lost my father. We lost a cousin, and then a year later, another cousin in 2021, and then a year later, an aunt. So you almost start thinking in your mind that maybe you're like cursed, which is where the fear of like dying starts to expand. And then you have to face the fact that, like, what is it that you fear about dying? Like, even if you did die, have you not lived a life? Because you die eventually, whether it's today or in 50 years from now, it's the same outcome. Of course, you want to have all these things you want to do. So then I go just run at them at the pace that you can, because you might not get to all of them. But if you know that you're trying every day, every day you're moving forward, as you say, every day you're trying to progress a bit, then it isn't a wasted day. And if you die, it wasn't a wasted life.
2 years is a long time not to have a tearful release.
I don't know when else I would, if I'm honest. I feel like maybe I'm not watching enough movies, eh?
Yeah.
When last did you cry?
I cry all the time. I cry when I'm happy. When I was picking your mom up, I had tears in my eyes. I cry all the time, dog.
I need to all tap in. My therapist needs to, because I think it's also maybe from a mental psychology. As a kid, I was a very big crybaby kid.
Yes.
So if I'm angry, I cry. If I'm happy, I'd cry. And then my mother would be like, hey, you're a boy.
Yeah.
Why are you? Then my tear ducts.
Yeah,
just decided. Yeah, they were just like, okay, Ndota must not cry. Sure. And like, I know I made a concerted effort to stop. And maybe from a subconscious level, my mind's just been like, okay, don't be out here just letting things go through. So maybe that's my next goal.
Any patient leave you in tears or losing a patient?
I think the crying, not so much. It does hit me very, very hard. Like there's a weight in the heart where... You almost have to do this weird juggling act where you can't let it phase you too much because the next person gets compromised.
Yes.
So if you're not sharp for this one then doesn't get the best version of you. Mm. But at the same time, you don't want to cut it off because then you don't try as hard.
Yes.
And then you lose people. So for me, I have like a tally in my head of things and of people where I'm like, okay, maybe don't like flagellate yourself and whip yourself, but just think, okay, how could this have been done better? How could you have optimized this? Because at the end of the day, it's one of the most difficult things to have people come up to you and trust you.
Yeah,
I think I don't take it for granted at all. Because when you have to have a conversation with someone and you're looking at someone, you're talking about their child, their partner, their whatever, and they're looking at you and they know what this is about. That's the worst part. It's like, you know why we're here. They're not, I wouldn't put you aside, but they wait for you to say it.
Yeah, I'm not here to give you a movie.
Yeah, spoiler. Yeah, I wouldn't walk up to you into this room and be like, we did it. It's like, and they still wait for you like.
Yeah, with hope.
Yeah,
with
like, hope. And you go, they're not, and then, and you can't cry. That's the worst part. Like, you can't be on the floor with him. You stand in the most like.
It's heavy though.
Very, very. It ages you in ways that I think most people don't want to talk out loud. Mm. But your soul does get weary at some point. And then you have to find ways to keep feeling like there's still a reason to push harder.
Yes, sir. Because you've got a notepad of things you haven't told us about that you're going to achieve one day, I think you have enough reasons to keep going, my dude. And I think you should.
I hope so, brother.
I think you've showed a lot of people that if you focus, you can achieve pretty much anything under the sun.
Yeah.
And I think you should keep going, even if your big brother doesn't feel that you might achieve the thing. We see you, Doc.
Mind you, he's amazing. He's an amazing, specialized, he's absolutely awesome. But, and I tell people this all the time, because my thing in social media used to be an average guy trying to make his mom proud. I didn't have all this other stuff added. And then my mother's like, why aren't you saying that you won this, you won that? Because I'm like, I'm literally an average guy, Kwanzimagwe, who just wanted you to be happy and to be proud of the man I became. Everything else came as secondary to that. So, yeah.
Are you happy? Are you? In fact, let me rephrase that. Do you have peace in your heart and your mind?
I try to strive for it every day. Mm. And I live with gratitude as the primary thing that I try to have in the forefront of my mind.
Yeah.
I'll be very honest with you. Sitting across from you, speaking with you, is... And it's not to like give you a big head or anything. It's just because...
I was born with one.
Yeah, listen, we all have enough gala at the back. No, it's just to think that in an industry like this, you rarely ever get, I wouldn't even just call it flowers, just like an acknowledgement of like, okay, you're working and you're somebody we see. Yeah. And I told people when I was nominated for this after, I was like, that alone was enough for me, because I go, sometimes I'm going... Is there any work that I'm doing? Because I do these shows and I was on Generations and I was doing all these things. Does anybody really acknowledge it? And so to get the nomination, I was like, oh, somebody saw me.
Yes.
So that alone, I was like, okay, somebody saw me. Cool. I'm not a... So for me, I'm incredibly grateful for the fact that I get to sit and have discussions like this. So yeah.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, brother.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and girls and girls. The good doctor
and a lot of boys
is back on top billing, gang boys. In fact, I can almost bet you your DMs are more boys than girls.
Hey, listen, Sisonka.
No, I'm saying this, I'm dealing with it, and I don't have a six pack, so I can imagine what you are going through.
I love that you're like, I'm telling you from my experience, I know.
When did guys become so forward, though?
Guys have always been forward.
It's the wildest.
Guys have always been forward. The person, the guys will share the girls. So if the guy likes girls and boys, equal. Equal. It's, yay. There have been pictures sent, things deleted. You're like, aye, that boy, aye.
No, my office deal with all of that.
Okay, so you don't have to have the trauma.
You're sending pictures to my office. I don't have to deal with...
one day pictures. You need to just pop them up here so we can see them.
No, don't do that. We can't threaten them. Otherwise, they'll stop sending. It's nice for shits and giggles.
The affirmation. You need to feel affirmed as a person.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, Top Billing is back. Bravo. Incredible TV. And if you have big dreams, a lot of them you can actually see on Top Billing. So go there and let's show them love. Let's show them support. Let the channel understand that this is the best call they could have made this year. We are out of here. Find the good doctor on social media, and or you can fake an illness, maybe fake a faint.
Wow.
And you might just end up in his emergency room somewhere. I'm just giving people ideas of how else they could maybe get to see you.
I feel like this is how I end up with issues here. Long lines, people needing rectal exams, all sorts of exams. Hey.
The doctor, I think my prostate is sore again.
It's like, sir, this is your fourth time. Can we not just do the PSA? No, clinical.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Fez Mkize is about to leave the building. Thank you for hanging out with us on Wow, What a Week. We are part of the Africa Podcast Network. Email us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. Coming to you from Discover TV, let them be your stage. Shout out Keletso Modisa Keng. She is our executive producer. Trevor and his crew at Pezulu Works for the cinematography. If we looked good, it's thanks to them. If we looked bad, it's our fault. That's how it works on this set. Until next week, have yourselves a great week in spite of yourselves. We're out of here.